welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza. This program is recorded via remote, and here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, May 7, 2020. Thousands of Congolese refugees escaped from the Lord's Resistance Army.
The center where they are now, which is Birisi, because they have small kids, they could not cover the 18 kilometers from the border.
And scores of people are killed in an intercommunal fighting in Sudan.
We have witnessed dozens of internally displaced persons from the Falata tribe who came to Niala here. Some are in Salam camp, some are in Haijabed. Many of them look tired because they didn't take anything along with them.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in Western Equatorial State say more than 300 Congolese refugees have fled to the area over the past 4 days. The refugees say they are fleeing from renewed activities of the Lord's Resistance Army, a rebel group from Uganda. A UNHCR official says some of the refugees have camped along the South Sudan-Congo border. Lasuba Memo has more for VOA from Juba.
Paulino Zizi, UNHCR's Commissioner for Refugee Affairs in Western Equatorial State, says the refugees began arriving at the South Sudan border last Thursday.
Friday, then, I went to receive them. But on Friday, they didn't arrive. The center where they are now, which is Birisi, because they have small kids, they could not cover the 18 kilometers from the border.
Zizi says refugees have been arriving in large numbers at the South Sudan DR Congo border for several days. More than a week ago, residents in Western Equatorial State reported seeing LRA Ugandan rebels in Duru, Paika, Nadiapai, and Sokare. Residents say the LRA crossed into the Democratic Republic of Congo's Dungu area from the Central African Republic and began abducting villages and looting property. Samuel Penny, Archbishop of the Internal Province of Western Equatoria of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, confirmed the refugees' arrival. Archbishop Penny says they were fleeing insecurity in DR Congo.
The source of their fleeing from their country is from the LRA, who are massacring them, who are killing, looting, and abducting.
Mm-hmm.
This is the statement they get.
Right.
They've been running here. But this time, that is the beginning in this year.
Zizi says the LRA's renewed presence in Western Equatorial State has disrupted cross-border trade, prompting traders to close markets.
And that is what they take to their bush. They are not taking any persons with them. They have not taken anyone, but they come wherever they show up. Like yesterday, we were told they show up near Nebiapai, and they also collected some food and then went back to the bush.
Zizi says farmers in villages along the border with Congo have abandoned their farms and moved into Yambio town for fear of being attacked by the LRA. Zizi says panicked villagers are fleeing their home and seeking refuge in towns like Yambio.
Instead of staying in town where they can contract the disease easily, they wanted to be working in their farm to their children who are not in school. But because of the fear of this movement, so many of our people have returned.
Zizi says teams of aid agencies, including the UN Refugee Agency and the World Vision, are on the ground monitoring the situation. He says the refugees who first arrived last weekend were given food assistance, and those still at the border will be transported to Yambio town later this week. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
More than 120 families of South Sudanese refugees in Gulu town of northern Uganda are receiving food aid this week from a charitable organization. The refugees who normally receive food ration at refugee camps are stuck in Gulu after last month's COVID-19 lockdown. Onen Walter Solomon has more for VOA from Gulu.
The refugee families are mostly headed by women and are usually anywhere from 4 to 18 family members, according to Hope Center Uganda, a charitable organization that is distributing relief food to the refugees in northern Uganda. The refugees say the last time they received food from the UN World Food Program was in February. On March 21st, Uganda announced a lockdown to control the spread of COVID-19, which prevented many refugees from returning to their camps to receive food rations. 49-year-old South Sudanese Elizabeth Akwal is a mother stuck in Gulu with 14 dependents. She is registered in the Kirandongo Refugee Settlement Camp, while her husband is in Juba. Speaking in a mixture of her Dinka native language and Acholi, she was grateful to receive 10 kilograms of maize flour and 6 kilograms of beans from Hope Center Uganda through the Gulu District COVID-19 Task Force.
Right now, I hardly have any food left. My neighbors do contribute some small quantities of foodstuff, like beans, cassava, and potatoes for my family. I am very happy that I have received this food. These beans and the maize flour will last for 3 to 4 days.
49-year-old South Sudanese refugee Angelina Keji resides in Gulu's Area Girl neighborhood with her 4 children and a friend's 3 children, who runs a small restaurant in Juba. Speaking in English and simple Arabic, Keji says life is difficult because her friend no longer sends money and food because of the COVID-19 lockdowns in both countries.
For me, it's not enough, but time you get some.
For me, the food is not enough, but when you get some small little food, you thank God because the food can help for this time before getting another one. Now I am stuck here and I can't access Kiriandongo camp. If the UN camp help us who have been in a lockdown in towns to go and receive food ration for our children whom we brought to town to get a good education, we appreciate it.
Anena says 2 weeks ago she received several calls from men and women in the community who needed food. With the lockdown, people can no longer earn money from temporary jobs to feed their families, which has caused increased domestic violence, said Anena.
Due to the government procedures to control the COVID-19, so many restrictions were put in place, and some of these restrictions prohibited the refugees, especially the South Sudanese that we all know, they couldn't go to their resettlement camps to get their monthly food that the World Food would give them. And a lot of things were also happening in their lives.
The vice chairperson of the Gulu District COVID-19 Task Force, Ojar Martin Mapenduzi, says Hope Center Uganda's distribution of food to the refugees is just serving humanity.
We are also serving humanity, irrespective of where you come from. When you are hungry, you are hungry. When you are sick, you are sick. And that is what we are doing.
Mapenduzi says there are some 2,000 South Sudanese refugees residing in Gulu town who normally receive help from the UNHCR and the Office of the Prime Minister in refugee camps. Most of these refugees say they are registered in the Adjumani and Kirandongo settlement camps. For VOA News, I am Onen Walter Solomon in Gulu, northern Uganda.
At least 20 people were killed and dozens of others wounded in an intercommunal fighting between two nomadic communities in Sudan's South Darfur state. Officials in the area say the two communities fought along the border with South Sudan. For VOA News, Michael Atit has more from Khartoum.
Speaking on Sudan's state-owned television station last night, the military caretaker of South Darfur State, Major General Hashim Khalid, confirmed that deadly fighting broke out between the Falata and Rezegat in Talas locality, some 25 kilometers south of Niala. Hashim says at least 27 people were killed in the fighting. He says the fight erupted over which person owned a firearm, which escalated into an exchange of gunfire between Falata and Rezegat tribes. The governor says security forces have been deployed in the area to prevent retaliatory attacks. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus via telephone from Niala town, Khalid Adam Saleh, the Secretary General for the Nomadic Herders Commission, blames the incident primarily on the spread of firearms among herders. Speaking in Arabic, he says thousands of citizens, mainly from the Falata tribe, arrived in Niala on Wednesday evening and some continue to arrive today. He says all of them are in dire need of humanitarian assistance.
We have witnessed dozens of internally displaced persons from the Falata tribe who came to Niala here. Some are in Salam camp, some are in Hayjabel. Many of them look tired because they didn't take anything along with them. They are definitely in need of assistance. A very simple matter, a very simple and personal issue between two people can turn into a tribal matter, and dozens of the innocent could lose their lives. At times, within one tribe, a disagreement can still occur between two different families against one another.
Saleh says, unfortunately, tribal disputes are all too common among tribes in the entire Darfur region.
A very simple and personal issue between two people can turn into a tribal matter, and dozens of the innocent could lose their lives. At times, within one tribe, a disagreement can still occur between two different families against one another.
UNAMID spokesperson Ashraf Issa tells South Sudan in Focus that the mission does not have much presence in South Darfur after they were ordered last year by the UN Security Council to withdraw from the Darfur region by this coming October. He says the presence of UN peacekeepers would have helped in this situation.
We have withdrawn from different parts of Darfur, including South Darfur, unfortunately. So we really don't have a presence on the ground. We have a small police unit in Kalma camp in Niala until such a time when the national authorities have capacity to take over security in the camp.
Last December, a deadly communal fighting erupted in El Janina town of West Darfur, leaving nearly 30 people dead and another 50 people wounded. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, health workers in Jonglei State complain about lack of protective gears. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you correct friends and loved ones?
I tell them the truth, because when I hide it, sometimes I have to tell them again and explain, which is not so fun. Yeah, it's easier for everyone.
You tell him what you have done is wrong. Next time, don't do like this, according to what he has done.
The first step I do actually is that I talk to the person. I sit back a little bit to be able to ascertain if it really went down with the person. To give the person a breathing space, just to ponder about whatever I said. And in the course of time, to allow process to have its way.
When they go wrong, I call them aside and talk to them. I tell them their behavior is very bad, so they need to stay away from it. And some of them get angry, but I don't care.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Some medical professionals in Jonglei State Capital say even though they remain committed to saving lives, lack of protective gear exposes them to the risk of contracting the coronavirus. The head of South Sudan's Midwives and Nurses Association in Bor says healthcare workers rely on their own gear to protect themselves and others. Dengai Deng has more for VOA from Bor.
Midwives and nurses at Boris State Hospital say they work in overcrowded wards without gloves, medical masks or gowns. John Anyeth Malak is a nurse at Boris State Hospital and chairperson of the South Sudan Midwives and Nurses Association in Bor.
This pandemic is a threat to the health workers, and we are supposed to have protective equipment so that we do our work without fear. But now we are working naked, in other words. We have no protections, and some of us are just risking their lives in order to protect the community.
Malak says the government and NGOs working in South Sudan are not protecting nurses and midwives, who he calls the backbone of the healthcare system, despite being underpaid.
The nursing and midwifery professions is also being regarded as a low profession, which most of the NGOs and our government is not paying much attention to the care of nurses and midwives in making them effective in doing their work, especially in terms of motivations. Nurses and midwives are not being motivated properly such that they continue delivering services to the community.
Malak says while nurses and midwives are committed to saving lives, they face many challenges while performing their duties, especially those who work at night. Midwife Michael Lemkor works in the maternity ward at Boris State Hospital. Kor says aside from poorly equipped facilities, male midwives like him face cultural prejudices on a daily basis.
You know, women sometimes, they don't accept a man to be a midwife. Even though she's coming to the hospital for deliveries, they can peer. Unless complication whereby they cannot see you, because they can feel that pain, and the pain cannot allow them to see you as a man who is attending the delivery.
In a statement released on Tuesday, the International Day of the Midwife, Dr. Natalia Kanem, Global Executive Director of the UN Population Fund, called on governments to provide necessary support to midwives working during the coronavirus pandemic. Dr. Kanem says nurses are the unsung heroes on the front lines of the COVID-19 crisis. Kanem says maternal and newborn health must be prioritized in the country's healthcare response to the pandemic. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
For some Egyptians, the impact of the coronavirus lockdown has been more frightening than the virus itself, which has infected thousands and killed hundreds. With businesses closed, the poor are getting poorer. As Egypt is starting to slowly reopen, medical experts warn the nation can't handle a larger outbreak. Heather Murdock in Istanbul has this report with Hamada Al-Eshram in Cairo.
These women are waiting for hours for food assistance in Cairo. It's crowded, but many aren't wearing masks because they say they can't afford them. And they're not alone. One in three people in Egypt live below the poverty line, and for many of them, the mandated coronavirus business shutdowns have made it impossible to afford enough food. This is Marusa Mustafa. She used to support her family of eight cleaning a school. Now schools are closed, and she relies on government assistance, which helps feed about 3 million people in Egypt. Just 10% of the nation's poor. In the coming weeks, the Egyptian government plans to lift some restrictions, like allowing hotels and some other businesses to open and shortening the nighttime curfew. And while this may relieve some of the pressure on Egypt's poor, experts warn that Egypt's hospitals are already overwhelmed and cannot handle a larger COVID-19 outbreak if the country opens too fast. COVID-19 is the disease caused by the coronavirus. Dr. Naira Ahmed Bayomi is the chief of infection control at Zayed Hospital. She says Egyptian hospitals do not have nearly enough beds or doctors. New COVID-19 cases and deaths in Egypt have increased more rapidly in the past few weeks, with more than 7,200 people infected and 452 confirmed dead as of May 6. Egyptian officials attribute the rise to more shoppers frequenting markets because of the Islamic holidays. For VOA News, I'm Heather Murdoch reporting from Istanbul with Hamada El-Rassam in Cairo.
Still in the Middle East, media worldwide is facing crisis on multiple fronts, exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic used by authoritarian regime to stifle press freedom. This year's Press Freedom Day aims at encouraging the role of media as a watchdog under the theme of journalism without fear. VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi discussed with Sarah Kamis, associate professor of communication at the University of Maryland, challenges facing the theme in the Middle East.
The challenges are too many to even count when you look at the situation of journalism in the MENA region, the Middle East and North Africa region, specifically when you take a closer look at some of the authoritarian regimes in the region, Saudi Arabia, Syria, Iraq, Egypt, others, you see that there's a very clear trend that there is really a lot of restrictions on press freedom. There is lack also of clear rules and guidelines in terms of accountability, transparency. What are the professional criteria by which these journalists can perform their job with fairness, with equity, with balance, with professionalism, without facing dire consequences? The picture is very gloomy. The picture is also very ambivalent. If you're a journalist now trying to practice your work and do your job in terms of trying to inform people, and you're working in one of these countries in this region, you can face countless number of challenges. You can end up in jail. You can end up losing your job altogether, facing dire consequences. And there are many journalists who are behind bars in this region, according to Committee to Protect Journalists, according to Reporters Without Borders, Amnesty International. They all made continuous calls for the release of journalists and for stopping the retaliation by regimes against journalists for simply doing their job and simply trying to make the truth and the reality known for their audiences.
Apart from the current pandemic, hopes for democratization raised by the Arab Spring are fading by the year. Authoritarian regimes continue to openly persecute journalists in the name of combating terrorism and online fake news. What's your take on that?
Unfortunately, this is very true. We have seen this decline, especially in organizations like Reporters Without Borders, Amnesty International, have been talking about a decline specifically over the last 4 years, from 2016 up till now. And I believe the worst year was 2018. The journalist Jamal Khashoggi was, as we all know, cruelly murdered in the horrific way that he was. There are so many indications now that indeed using accusations, very false and very broad and vague accusations, like spreading false news, belonging to some kind of banned organization. Many of the journalists who are behind bars in many of these countries are facing these types of allegations, which are very vague, are not defining even terms like what is false news, what is terrorism. They're left out there with very broad words, but at the end of the day, these people lose their freedom, they end up behind bars, they end up being fired, they end up facing very dire, very severe consequences for simply doing their job. The clampdown by regimes in this region is not just anymore on traditional media, as we call it, right? Television and radio, newspapers. We're talking now about also social media. Even a post on a Facebook page or a tweet can get you behind bars. So this is a very alarming situation as well. And it's not only about local and domestic journalists and reporters. There are also cases where foreign journalists and correspondents can also face dire consequences if their narrative is clashing or contradictory to the official governmental narrative.
Who's in the Arab world behind regression away from the Arab Spring?
I can just say that there has been a tug of war between the regimes and their opponents in the region in a very clear and a very obvious way. Unfortunately and sadly, that we have seen the opposite happening. We've seen more regression, more authoritarianism, more moving away from the even the small margins of freedom that we had before. They're shrinking or disappearing. The authoritarian governments are building their own learning curves in terms of mastering some of these technological tools and online devices that they did not really master well at the beginning. When the Arab Spring happened in 2011, the Tunisian regime, the Egyptian regime were taken by surprise. The activists were at an advantage. They were, you know, a few steps ahead of the regime. The regimes were at a disadvantage. They were not prepared for it. Now, in 2020, the situation and the picture is very different. What we are seeing now is a lot of the authoritarian regimes, they're building their own electronic army. They're going after their opponents, even those who are outside of the Arab world trying to protect themselves, protect their own safety, they're not quite safe anymore, because through electronic armies and through cyber activism, the regimes can go after them and they can try to also block them, sabotage them, or even worse, as we saw in some cases, you know, they can really lose their lives altogether as a result of their own activism or journalism. So I see it as a tug of war between not just regimes and opponents, but between the forces of liberation and the forces of repression.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Western Equatoria state officials say more than 300 refugees from the DR Congo have arrived in the area after Lord's Resistance Army rebels began looting property and abducting people from their villages. A UNHCR official says hundreds of other refugees fled their homes and are encamped along the South Sudan DRC border. Paulino Zizi, the UNHCR's Commissioner for Refugee Affairs in Western Equatoria State, says the refugees have been arriving in large numbers at the South Sudan border since last Thursday. Western Equatoria State residents reported seeing LRA rebels more than a week ago in several villages. They say the LRA crossed into the DRC's Dungu area from the Central African Republic. More than 120 South Sudanese refugee families stuck in the northern Ugandan town of Gulu are receiving food this week from a charitable group. The refugees normally receive food rations from the UN's World Food Program at various Ugandan refugee camps, but could not get back to their camps in the northern part of the country after the COVID-19 lockdown. The group Hope Center Uganda, which is providing the refugees with food, says the refugee families are mostly headed by women and are usually anywhere from 4 to 18 people. The refugees say the last time they received food from the UN was last February. And finally, at least 27 people were killed and dozens of others were wounded during fighting between two nomad tribes in Sudan's South Darfur state, according to local officials. Authorities say the dispute started over the possession of firearms. The military caretaker of South Darfur state, Major General Hashim Khalid, said on state television last night that the deadly fighting broke out in Talas, about 25 kilometers south of Niala. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with a Kakua song by Victoria Ole.
Do kakala rakata ki.
been listening to Victoria Olea singing in her native Kakwa language. One of my friends in Juba has difficulties pronouncing the word Kakwa. Instead, he says, Papua. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to stay at home, wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Bibiza, bibiza.